Welcome back to the DHF podcast. I'm Scott McNay, pastor here at the La Plata Christian Church in La Plata, Missouri, and I am joined this afternoon with Drew McClellan at First Christian Church, Port Arthur. Good afternoon, Drew.
Good afternoon, Scott.
It's good to see you, man.
You too.
And with us also is Michael Tenike at the First Christian Church, Pittsfield. Welcome, Michael.
Well, thanks, man. So glad to be with you all today.
Yeah, today we are going to be sharing a little bit about worship, because worship is this incredible gift that we've been given as Christians to connect with the heart of God. I mean, in some incredibly simplistic terms, like confessions, we simply state who God is, or just the reality of living in a world that's His. And then we talk about how it gets multi-layered and multi-dimensional, and different churches have different cultures of worship, which is great. But unfortunately, like anything else, diversity ends up becoming divisive. And it has this way of unraveling Christian communities. It could be on style. It could be on different forms of worship that we use in church together. And so today we're not talking about hard and fast solutions, but we're just talking about experience, that as pastors, we've had experience in seeing people come together in worship and how God has used that in our midst. So this afternoon, Michael, we're going to start with your story and some of the road that you and the church there have traveled together.
Yeah, well, thanks. And first of all, thanks so much for doing these DHF podcasts. It's sure useful to hear experiences from other individuals and know that many of the same things that you're dealing with and contending with, you're not the only ones who've walked that road. Well, you know, our story, you know, was similar, I'm sure, to a lot of others. We had a church. When I first came to Pittsfield, there was a lot of talk of a desire of wanting to grow, but I don't think really comprehending in the type of growth that was being desired, that was going to necessitate change. And change, of course, you all know, and anyone who's, you know, been in the church for a while knows that, especially when we come to styles of worship and things that we're comfortable with and settings that we have been around our whole lives, sometimes they don't necessarily equate to another generation. And in our church, when I first got here again, was a little bit on the older of the age spectrum, and they just had some very serious conversations about wanting to look to the future and become more appealing to a younger generation. And so as those conversations ensued, you know, the traditional worship wars, how everybody's gone through a lot of those, I was really determined out of Psalm 145, just really felt we had gone on a retreat and just felt compelled. This one generation shall commend your works to another and shall declare your mighty acts, and begin to come back and just teach and begin to talk about how to make decisions. Because, you know, in churches, sometimes the culture of decision-making process is who's the loudest voice, or who's the longest voice, or who's willing to shed the most blood, or who has been the largest financial contributor. And we began to really kind of challenge some atmosphere things and look inside about even the way decisions are made. And I'm really, really grateful that a lot of individuals were excited about looking outside of their comfort zone to say, what does another group need? Now, that doesn't mean to say that there isn't value in what we have. It just means to say that I want to really be particularly considerate of what the needs of someone else is. And that's a philosophy we began to teach. And we began to not just look to keep people happy, and to not just look to say, oh, we've got to do this and throw everything else out, but begin to not just look to how can we tolerate what someone else wants, but really appreciate. So the conversations began to have with some of our younger people who'd come in to say, hey, you like this style and you like these things and understand as much as this is important to you. Let's see why this is a value to some of the older generation, and that necessitated conversations and fellowship times. And I thought, oh my goodness, how is this going to happen? But it's played out in a pretty marvelous way. And I really tip my hat to a lot of the older folks in our congregation who have stepped out of their comfort zone, even if that means putting cotton in their ears when they walk in, when we have a more aggressive worship set. Just a couple weeks ago, we had a really wonderful time with our youth, and they were doing a very, very aggressive song and had a large number of kids. Well, anyway, they were all at church that morning. And so I decided to change up the thing and the worship programming and just say to the kids, adults, would you like to see how the kids worship at their worship night? And they're like, yeah. And I was like, you don't know what you're asking. And they almost made like a mosh pit in the front of the church. I mean, just cranked up the music, and it was very loud. I mean, uncomfortably loud. Kids were just going crazy. And I thought, boy, I'm going to get emails and letters afterwards. And I did, but it wasn't the way I thought. It was how exciting, how wonderful. No, we really didn't like it, but we so appreciate the excitement and the energy. And because it was a value to them, it was biblical centric. It was gospel centric. The theological messages were right on. Those underpinnings were important. But we can embrace maybe a way of doing things that's different than our own. And boy, I think that's a huge win when churches can get to that place.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you started that process, how long did it take to kind of discern we need to take a new direction and then to let that unfold? Part of it naturally, part of it through leading and through applying pressure or heat or whatever it is. Because some people sometimes get an unrealistic expectation of like, I felt God move and then we just did it. Like, sometimes that's not the case.
Well, in our experience, we had, as individuals began to come and we would ask that we wouldn't see them afterwards, like, well, it's just not our cup of tea, meaning stylistically. And we realized that people were being drawn but not kept. So the first thing we tried to do is start a separate contemporary service. You know, we had our traditional service with hymns and organs, and then a second service in between the two that would be in the gymnasium with a worship band. So we it went well, and it grew, and it was really wonderful. And we had this odd thing happen that people would meet each other in the grocery store or at work and invite them to come to church. And they said, where do you go to church? Well, we go to First Christian Church in Pittsburgh. Oh, well, I do too. We had two different churches. We had two entirely different, and which works. You know, a lot of large churches have various services to various styles. And I, you know, that works for a lot, but for us, I was kind of convicted that that we were missing something because people were enabled to remain comfortable in their style, which is not a bad thing. Please don't get me. I have my own preferences that I like, so I'm not at all saying. But for us, I felt that another place of growth is going to be to get beyond prioritizing our preference more than looking to even invite a level of comfort for the sake of growing. And because I think those relationships are important. I think it is, in fact, a benefit for the kingdom for people who are of one generation to find a way to strive to build those bridges of connection, to give wisdom and to glean wisdom and to learn patience. I think that that's a critical thing. So we came back and we decided, I kind of had a meeting and I kind of joked around. I pitched it to the elders. They agreed 100%. We brought it to the church and said, so we don't have, no one's going to win. We're all going to lose. Everyone's going to be uncomfortable. But when we pitched it at that, obviously not everybody was a fan, and there's been a lot of growing, a lot of growth pains through it, but it's just, for us, it was several years in bringing that around.
Well, I think sometimes that unrealistic expectation comes from our utilitarian sense. Mm-hmm. Like, let's just nail it on the first try. And it's like, well, some quote I came across the other day where yesterday's solution is today's problem. Like, yeah, sometimes you got to go through a couple bummer ideas or just necessary steps that aren't the final solution. And to be honest, do we ever arrive at the final solution? No, it's just one more step, and it will develop next year And if we're faithful to attending to that concept, it sure makes growing, maturing, and being transformed a little bit easier. But absolutely.
Well, so, and we certainly haven't arrived. Yeah, we certainly have not arrived. We're still, as you said, we are a work in progress. And what happened here, I wouldn't dream of saying, hey, someone else take up what to do. It's simply what we discern. God was directing us. And what I've seen is it's been a maturing process. Yeah. And it certainly has brought unity of vision and unity of purpose, and we're embracing some things that are different. It's helped us in our evangelism as well. So it's been a cool thing for us.
That's awesome. And again, I don't want to put this out there like this is the solution, everyone. So if you cover these bases, it's all numbers from there. But I know some people like me love the nuts and bolts. So musically, stylistically, what kind of form or pattern do you run through, or different options that you take? How would you describe that?
So it is, I would describe it as fluid. I would say
very good.
That,
that's fine.
Because there are, according to what is going on in the preaching calendar and according to the themes of, you know, what book study we're in or where we are, might lend itself one way or another. We have like implemented that on five Sunday months, the fifth Sunday is kind of rollback Sunday, where we break out, we dust off the hymn, the organ, and we do traditional hymns, you know, sometimes even a cappella. But on the other weeks, we have worship teams in which we have used a process of trying to intentionally mentor even high school musicians to bring them in. In some of our research, we found that youth who are active and participating in some form of ministry in church are statistically far, far more likely to remain committed in college and then on into adulthood. So we've tried to say that when we say youth ministry, we're not saying ministry to youth. We're saying training youth to minister. That was a philosophical thing that we, you know, tackled, you know, years and years ago. And this was one avenue because we do have a lot of young musicians. And so they start off in the youth worship bands, and then, you know, ones who really show promise and desire, we work them into one of several different worship teams. So a lot of times a Sunday morning service might look like doing a hymn in an upbeat way. Doing an acoustic set, or having a worship chorus and the choir, or doing a mashup of a modern song and throwing in, you know, some choruses from some hymns. You know, we have a lot of folks who like, you know, and I totally get it. The lyrics of so many hymns are so rich and deep in theology that a lot of our modern worship choruses sometimes lack. So it's good to have those conversations and to bring them in. So the planning, I just say I don't want to say it's no rhyme or reason, but it's extremely fluid for whatever it seems to be appropriate for that particular Sunday. So there's a lot of diversity that way.
Yeah, and that's awesome. We only in the last year have started doing a youth Sunday because for me, I want the youth to be involved on a every Sunday level and so completely integrated with what we're doing that we don't just do that once or twice a year. Now we've decided we should dedicate a whole Sunday to it because it's worth it, but that's not at the expense of, we want our youth to be exploring their gifts and contributing to ministry, even ministry and worship. So, well, Drew, at your church, how have you all worked through some of these things?
So I've joked 100 times that I'm going to write a book on things not to do your first year in ministry because that's what I did. I mean, I did everything you shouldn't possibly ever think about doing in my first 2 years.
We should have done this podcast sooner then. Yeah.
Right.
we need to rush this one out.
Just in case. So I came in August of 2020. I mean, we were just coming back into full worship from COVID. We'd made all kinds of weird adjustments to the service. The praise team, when I first got here, was singing virtually. I mean, they were pre-recording and singing on the screens, and that stopped quickly. That was terrible. That was just, it was not sustainable. It's just not a good environment to worship. So what we did was, when I first got here, it was very much hymns. We've got a virtual program that plays most of our music, because we lack in musicians, which is really interesting. But we've got a lot of vocal talent. We just don't have the instrumental talent, and it's coming as we've seen growth. So we started that same integrated idea. But you know, we had the chancel, we had the whole works. So we went all out. My secretary, who's also part of our property team, I have to give her credit, and she was 82 at the time. She just turned 84 today. She went straight to Luke and said, "We're pouring new wine in old wineskins, and you know, we've got to do something completely different." And we did. We redid the front of the sanctuary. Took the old chancel out. We made it more of a modern setup. But then we were still singing pretty hymn heavy. We were doing Fourth Sunday hymn sing, but we ended up in a really bad, we punted on an Easter Sunday, and it was awful. We had 115 people here, which is the most people they'd seen in quite a long time. And, we sang like six choruses of, you know, those Easter hymns are forever long, and we sang every verse and the whole works. And then the following Sunday was the Fourth Sunday. So anybody that came back got two Sundays in a row of this hymn sing. And not that I have a problem with hymns. That's not what I'm saying at all. I actually really enjoy hymns. But it hurt bad. So we've completely blended our entire worship service.
Okay.
We've got, our praise team sings usually three songs, sometimes four. But they are either modern songs or an upbeat hymn. And then we have a communion hymn and a closing hymn. And they could also be choruses as well. But we looked at the entire service. We added some responsive reading at the beginning. Like we really went, interdenominational in how we did our worship. And we've seen a great response, and not just membership, but also, you know, full attendance. Now, you've got some people that are, well, we should sing more hymns. Well, you know, you're getting almost three hymns a Sunday. So you're still getting a pretty decent balance, and you're not going to please everybody. It's never going to happen. But it's,
hey, they can stay afterward and sing as many as they want.
Sing as all you want. You know, I'll get them out and it'll be a great time.
Right. Absolutely.
But it's really interesting. And to what Michael said, you know, we were seeing such great influx of intergenerational connection in our Bible studies, in all of this. And it wasn't correlating into our worship. And finally, you know, we sat down and said, hey, we've got to make worship look like everything else. Our fellowship is intergenerational. Our Bible studies are intergenerational. Mm-hmm. We have to do something where we're not just singing hymns from 1800. You know, we have to. Yeah. We have to make that switch in, but bringing some of that high church element in has also, you know, changed some of the dynamic. And we've seen a lot of, especially with the issues in some of the higher churches now, we've seen a lot of people looking for a contemporary high church feel that, you know, we've seen people come in.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. How do you discern what kind of musical styles are best employed in the music during worship?
Trial and error. I mean, that's just really
nice. Just laying it out there.
There's some Sundays where, you know, okay, the worship team and I get together afterwards, like, oh, that was a great set, that everything worked. And Sundays I'm like, do you all listen to some of the words that you're saying? Like, you know, the theology's not there. And it doesn't line up with what we're doing. And so, you know, we've sang songs that we've sang one time and we'll never sing again.
Yeah.
You've got some new songs that we've put in that really work, but it's really trial and error.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you all are the same way. Like, there's some stuff that slips by that sounds good until you get it in the worship setting and
you're
like, wait a minute, this isn't what we're about here.
Yeah. Right. Sure. How about you, Michael?
You know, similar to what Drew said, you need to, of course, start off with the lyrics and make sure that the lyrics theologically are in line with where you're going. But then I think, you know, so like if you're having a, a sermon and you really feel, or the theme of the Sunday is perhaps a very convicting Sunday. Well, yeah. There's a lot of music that lends itself to those, both traditional and modern. So I think in one of those, it's kind of dealer's choice in terms of how some of those go. But I usually pray and meet with my music director, and I'll share some things if I have some things on my heart. Music director has, you know, we'll talk at our staff meeting about, hey, here's what's going on next week. Here's what's going on this week. Here are some thoughts. Here are some themes. And here are some ideas. Sometimes there'll be a, you know, if it's a motivate, if the Sunday is really focused on motivation, well, then a lot of the songs are going to be very upbeat and more energetic. If they're more introspective, then they're going to be more quiet and perhaps reflective. So we try to not only take just the lyrics, but also the mood and the feeling and the vibe of the different songs, and perhaps try to make those work together as well with the overall theme of the Sunday.
Yeah, I think that's wise. I mean, if God created aesthetics, I mean, not to be abusive or manipulative, but just to be logical and wise, those elements should be taken into account. Absolutely. As well as where you're at in the church calendar and what kind of season you're in. I think those are all things that should be employed.
Something that we did last year was we really started a focus on that liturgical church calendar. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, you know, we they've always had a Christmas Eve service, but we added some more liturgical services within the year. But what we did was last year, we did not sing Christmas hymns, you know, in the month of December. Before they were going all the way, you know, that's all you sing all the way through the month.
Wow. Kudos to you, Drew. I have always wanted to try it, and I just don't have the guts, to be clear.
But we, you know, you lose that praise element in a lot of ways with some of those hymns, because and not that there's anything wrong with them. There's some powerful, powerful Christmas hymns, but you kind of see the same thing with your closing hymn. People aren't in that worship mindset. They're trying to sing their way through so they can go out. Kind of the same thing with those Christmas hymns. You're just kind of, okay, well, it's Christmas time, so we're singing. So what we did was we moved a couple of the Christmas hymns into the communion setting. But our Christmas Eve service was all Christmas hymns.
Yeah.
It was, you know, a very traditional family setting, you know, almost medieval type, you know, setting. And it really built up to that Christmas Eve service, which I thought, you know, really enhanced that service. And it also, we saw a higher rise in attendance during those, you know, Advent weeks where people weren't expecting to come in and just, you know, sing carols.
Yeah. No, I think, well, I mean, and per the church calendar, Advent is a completely different season than Christmas. And so I always start Advent every year with O Come, O Come, Emmanuel. I mean, does it get better than that? But then, like, yeah, given 2 weeks, I sing Joy to the World, Drew, and there's just no, I mean, there's no beating that out of me, if I'm afraid, because I just like the theologically rich lyrics of Joy to the World. Like, I just preach on that for a Sunday. It's just, but building the anticipation and holding back from carols for a few weeks sets up an expectation to want that day more and to express that he's here more. And maybe I'm lackadaisical and lazy with that discipline that could be better handled. I'll be the first to say it. And I think there's real depth that can be met by walking in step with how churches have walked that for years and years and years. So, which is kind of far afield from where we're at, but it does play into the same idea.
Well, then you can go the other way and do the theological exposition of some of the errors in Christmas carols and traditions, which I have done, and I would not recommend it. You get lots of emails. So let me just save you that one, Drew. Let me just save you that one.
I appreciate it, Michael.
Were they kings? Man. Were there three?
Awesome. Yeah. Well, I think that's great. I like to hit obscure hymns, Christmas carols that just, and so like last year we did I saw three ships and explained like all the symbols and what that all. And then we've done Good King Whistle Slaw, and just some people are paying attention and get something new out of it. Some people are like, good grief. I mean, where are we? So anyway.
Well, then we could, you know, go to the whole pagan influence on all the Easter celebrations, and
right.
which again, let me save you some problems, Drew. Don't go there with the Easter bunny.
I save all those for Bible study, and then I've said this before, and I think I said it at conference, that I've told my people that when you burn me, make sure the wood's wet so I can continue to speak until I'm completely.
We're gonna get a Polycarp reference here coming up here.
All righty. Well, do we have any final thoughts when it comes to blended worship and implementation and just general wisdom that you've gleaned along the way?
Know your people. I think that's what it comes down to. Know your people. Don't try to push something for the sake of pushing something. You know, don't be chasing new people at the expense of the folks you've already got. You know, really, really know your people, listen to them, and see where they can be met. But like Michael said, don't be content with your comfort zone. You know, be ready to push the envelope.
That's very, very well said. I would add to that, you know, growth is hard and growth is painful. And I think that, you know, we have learned probably some bad lessons over, you know, if you want to look at what's happened in evangelical circles, you know, over the past several decades of capitulating to comfort. So I would say that it's worth the wrestle. And as we know our people, we love our people, and we, instead of bickering against our differences, find a way to appreciate the other things that people love and is meaningful. So if it's meaningful to you, even though, I mean, look, I hate raisins. I hate raisins. I mean, I hate them. My wife loves them. So I got to find a way to not just tolerate it, but to love that she loves them. And sometimes, you know, just grit and bear it.
Amen. That's right. Well, thank you both for being with us on today's podcast. We'd encourage everybody to go and rate the podcast. We appreciate that. That helps us get the word out and share it with others. If you want more information on Disciple Heritage Fellowship, you can go over to discipleheritage.org. I'm Scott McNay, and we'll see you next time.